Okay. Mm-hmm. Going over the last thing, the only thing that I wanted to ask you about that I was somewhat confused about on the previous interview was your abortion.
My abortion?
Which one? I don't know. Oh. It's been a while.
I had a legal and an illegal.
All right, tell me about the legal one first.
Well, the illegal was down on Central Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I found it by talking to a friend who referred me to a friend, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor was, this person who presented himself to the doctor, was in an office that was completely bare to the walls.
Mm-hmm.
Like it had one chair, a straight back chair, and the front room, you know. Mm-hmm. This woman wearing a nursing dress was there to greet me. She took me into the room, and I never saw her again.
Mm-hmm.
The room itself is just a big room. It was a table right in the middle, totally unadorned. I got on the table, black doctor. He didn't use any anesthesia, of course, or even any local.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just basically did what they call a cold steel procedure, meaning DMC, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
Open it up and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely painful.
Imagine.
It was really painful. And little did I know, but he packed me with gauze. I didn't tell you about this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He must have put, a whole roll of gauze, stuffed it in there. I'm sure to keep me from, bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
So I was calling back the next day, which I did. And at that point, he said, well, now you have to take out the gauze.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day or the day after that I had to do it. I don't remember when I had to actually take it out, but it was
mm-hmm.
within the day or the day after. I think it was the day after, actually.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, what I found was that this had gotten hard and dried.
Yeah.
So pulling it out was like pulling out razor blades. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it was just awful. And it took me several hours to get that out. I mean, it was a real... You know, you pull an inch and then
mm-hmm.
you lie back and rest for a little while and
mm-hmm.
stick your head between your legs and then you do it again. I finally did get that gauze out of there. And I really didn't have any other bad people, you know. About a month later, my next menstrual period, I just flooded
mm-hmm.
standing in, you know, my in-laws. Living room and
mm-hmm.
just totally.
So you were married when you had your abortion?
I had just gotten separated.
Uh huh. And that's why.
Yeah.
And how much did you pay?
$200. Which was cheap.
What time was that?
That was 60. 63? Yeah.
How much did you have your legal one? I mean your legal one.
That was in 60. 9, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? What was 68? No, 68 it must have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 1968. It was after abortion, right, it was after 67 because abortion was legal
mm-hmm.
here, but it wasn't very available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the way that I got it was by going to a psychiatrist
mm-hmm.
and telling him that I would commit suicide if I didn't get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Which was about the most humiliating experience I think I ever had in my life. I mean, it was such an obvious, hypocritical situation, and he just basically told me that if I didn't tell him that, he couldn't sign the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you mean I have to tell you? I would kill myself? I said, well, I've never thought about killing myself. I don't think I ever would do that. He said, well, it's up to you. You have to make that decision. And I sat there for about 5 minutes, and just, you know, finally said, yes, I think I would kill myself if I didn't get this abortion. That'll be
$90. Mm-hmm. Well, how much did it cost to have the legal abortion?
About $250.
So the legal one was cheaper.
Or 350.
But there was probably inflation.
Well, yeah. I had it in the hospital. And I woke up in, I was in general, and I woke up in horrible pain. And, you know, I didn't know enough about, I was just, I, that was at a very, the very point that I was going to Herman's Clinic and beginning, you know, beginning to learn about abortion. But I just still didn't feel, you know, I felt more confident still with my own doctor, right? Well, big mistake, big mistake. Because now, you know, once I knew what abortion really was, I realized what the priest had done. He, first of all, must have used a weighted speculum. I don't know if you've ever seen those. Well, you know, I've shown you the speculum. Okay. Imagine just the bottom half of that in metal with a big metal ball on it. So they just put it in and it just basically
hangs.
Hangs and drags down, you know, the perineum. And he must have scraped the living daylight out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And that really, I was in pain all night. I had a very, very, you know, one day of just extreme pain.
Did they give you any painkillers?
Oh, I don't remember. They may have, but it was beyond painkillers. You know. And so I would have to say that I think my illegal abortion was more. What more technically done better, you know, of the two. Cheaper, and I didn't have to humiliate myself, and I didn't have to, you know, spend 24 hours in pain.
I went totally out of order last time. Oh, okay. In around like the middle of 1974, in the press, there started being like a lot of controversy surrounding the Feminist Women's Health Center and allegations that people were forced out unless they committed a certain amount of time, and that the opening of another Feminist Women's Health Center was blocked. And I was pretty confused about it, and a lot of it was just name calling stuff. Do you remember that and what happened?
I remember this didn't just happen in 1974. This is an ongoing thing.
Okay.
this happened from the minute we started. I mean, the women's movement was very fractionated, and there was a lot of this going on with everybody. I mean, it was both good and bad. I mean, I just want to preface to say that on one hand, we were our own worst enemy, and that was too bad. On the other hand, I really think that those attacks, you know, because I was, I participated in attacks as well as being attacked, were really based on a sense of the importance of what we were doing and how vital it was that we do it just right, and that, you know, we were just raising our consciousness about how we had been all been screwed over, and so that heightened awareness caused us to question everything. You know, so you have to look at it. It's a two-edged sword, I mean, in a way. So I'm guessing that you're probably talking about the article in Off Our Backs, which is the National Women's Newspaper.
I don't think I ever have looked at that. I saw a bunch of stuff in Sister.
I think Sister was
just like 1 month there'd be an article by people complaining, like people said they were squeezed out, and then the next month there'd be articles.
I'm telling you, this went on. So you have to be a little more specific.
Back forth, back forth. Well, I'd just like you to talk about, that's one of the big things I'm looking at.
The local battle.
Yeah, the local.
So there was a national attack.
Tell me about both.
I think you're talking about the Hope Blacker.
Yeah, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah. Hope Blacker. as I say, a movement creates a lot of energy and it draws in a lot of people of all types. And I do mean all types. And Hope was a very erratic, emotionally unstable person, in my opinion. Also a very brilliant person, but you know. And she got it in her mind that she wanted to start a similar clinic in on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
She was studying at UCLA at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I had met Hope at the Women's Center,
mm-hmm.
and we had, you know, worked together on things. So she did counseling with our group.
Mm-hmm.
This is pre-73.
Yeah, that's, so when you're in the back of the...
That's why you say 74, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure, because basically pre-73, mm-hmm. so Hope was counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was not too satisfactory, because Hope stank. She reeked.
Wow.
Did not use deodorant, and I mean, this was, at the time, very political to mm-hmm. not use deodorant, but most people took baths, and
mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to use deodorant, you know. But Hope had a really bad problem with DO. And when you're dealing with women who are pregnant, this can be a problem. I mean, it just is. And she highly resented any correction in that. And she came to, you know, she came to the hospital dressed filthy, and she held her clothes together with big safety pins, and she just was too far from the women who came in,
mm-hmm.
you know. And we had a dress code, and our dress code was to dress like the women who came in. In other words, there was a range of how they dressed, and it was okay for us to dress in that range, but we didn't want to be overdressed or underdressed. And Hope didn't take kindly to that either. And so there was a lot of friction with her as a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she was a very frenetic type person, and she just radiated all kinds of, you know, nervous vibes up and down the hall. I mean, you could hear her coming through her clogs, and, you know, that was the counselor. I mean, she did have a pain in the ass as mm-hmm. far as that situation was concerned. So that didn't work out too great.
So did you ask her to leave, or?
I'm kind of hazy on that. I don't know if I know that it stopped, and whether we asked her to leave or whether she just refused to live up to our standard, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever happened, she did leave.
Mm-hmm.
She subsequently got funding. And at the time, I mean, I it's hard to point the finger today, because we subsequently have accepted a lot of the same kinds of funding, and we've made a lot of the same kinds of compromises.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, we hadn't made those compromises.
Like, whose money did you take that you wouldn't take?
The LA Regional Family Planning Council. And the reason was that we were then, and really comparatively speaking, we still are, much more radical. And the not Hope, you know, and not Mary Petrinovich, who was another person who was with LARC, but the LA Regional Family Planning Council would have tried to eliminate us. I mean, these are the population control forces, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the time, we were considered those absolutely radical feminists.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were iced out of the funding, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there was a genuine conflict there.
Mm-hmm.
Called who's going to get the funding.
Mm-hmm.
And Hope did, and that's the funding that started the West Side Women's Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hope did not last there too long. I mean, she got it together, and she performed a very useful function for them in that sense. But she was such an abrasive, difficult person. Besides, she got appointed to the Board of Medical Quality Assurance.
Mm-hmm.
This is when Jerry Brown came in and took away the Board of Medical Examiners and formed the BMQA,
mm-hmm.
which included consumers.
Yeah.
And she got on the BMQA, and she was horrible on the BMQA. She was not a friend of women. She was self-aggrandized. She was a clog. She accomplished nothing. I mean, really, the woman was, and I haven't heard from her since she got off the BMQA, but she's not the kind of person you want to have over you.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, and as far as I know, was an implacable enemy of the health center. So that there was that clash. I don't know if that's the one you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You have to really, as I say, there was so much, so many. Unless it was major, I'm not going to, I necessarily remember.
Uh-huh. What about among the people who worked within the thing? How was your center structured?
It was structured in a semi-hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to today, it was very collective. Today we are kind of a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we try. I mean, even there, we're just now refining our hierarchical structure. Compared to the ideal, we were hierarchy. We were often attacked on that very point.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the very people who went and got funding from Westside were some of our harshest critics, because we demanded to be paid. We were against volunteerism.
Mm-hmm.
And we said it was important to be paid, and it was important that women's work was, I mean, that's how we saw it, that women's work was important, we needed to be paid. We also said that we had a philosophy, we had a, line is what our critics called it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to work at the health center, you needed to subscribe to that philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
At least if you wanted to work in an equal decision-making capacity. Now, we soon developed a dual kind of structure because we had, we had to mesh with the real world. I mean, unfortunately, you cannot incorporate collectively. You cannot pay your taxes collectively. You cannot get clinic licenses collectively. You have to have names. You have to have people who are responsible. You have to have chains, authority. So, this is how we dealt with it. We had this too. We had what we call a regular staffer. This was someone who worked 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, got a set rate of pay, had a set job description.
Mm-hmm.
That included our bookkeepers, our receptionist. Those types of anchor type jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that took that position may or may not share that philosophy. They were not required to
believe in the collective spirit.
Right, or the line. Obviously, if they were anti-abortion, they weren't going to last very long. But, it was pretty broad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we might have someone wear a T-shirt in saying, you've come a long way, baby, or something. it wasn't exactly that pure.
Mm-hmm.
But if you talked about the regular staff, we met on an average of 10 hours a week, and sometimes a lot more. We all read every piece of mail, and we voted on every single thing.
Mm-hmm.
So within that structure, we were quite collective.
Mm-hmm.
But we had the dual. And incidentally, people were not at all required to be in either one. And we had people who went back and forth between those two.
So what was the other set? I'm confused. There was your regular staff, which would have been like the receptionist.
Regular?
Yeah.
No. Well, I'm sorry. I used the wrong word. Contract staff.
Okay.
Was the first category. And the regular staff.
Okay, so who's the contract staff?
The contract staff was like a bookkeeper.
Uh-huh.
Or the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People that wanted to work there as a job. Because they wanted to be at a women's clinic.
Uh-huh.
Whereas the people in the regular full-time staff got paid a percentage salary. I mean, we just took whatever was left over after we paid
them. Did those people do?
Well, we were at the clinic and the administration. We had the decision-making aspect.
So the regular staff was the ones who did, like you said, read all the mail and did the voting? And
right.
The contract staff, just they worked there? Did they?
No, they attended meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And
did they have equal say?
No, they absolutely didn't. And that didn't sit well with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Because most of them work in this. That's why they work.
No, it just doesn't sit well with people to come in and let me put it this way. I went to a concert, not a concert, the San Francisco Mime Troupe had a program the other night on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
And they had three types of seats that you could buy. You could buy the $9 seats, the $15 seats, the $25 seats.
Mm-hmm.
I bought the $25 seats. First of all, it was for a good cause, and so I considered it a contribution. Secondly, I wanted to get the maximum benefit out of the performance. So they had, you know, cordoned off the area for the $25 seat and the $9 seat. And so we went and sat in the cordoned off area, because that was what we had to pay for. Person after person came up and hassled the usher. What is this? Is not political. You know, you shouldn't do this. Anybody should be able to sit anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'd be pointed out, well, if you want to go pay $25, there's still plenty more places to sit here. They didn't want that. They wanted to sit in the $25 seat, but they only wanted to pay
$15. Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, I don't like to badmouth our side, politically our side, but that is our Achilles heel. And my attitude then and now is too bad. If the 40-hour people a week wanted to throw in their lot, if they wanted to work whatever number of hours it took, if they wanted to accept whatever pay was left over, they could have full decision-making power. If not, they couldn't. And that was not life. That's how it was. And I think the other thing that I saw happen a lot with women's groups, and I think any of the people that you're talking to that were around during that era would verify this, is that groups came and went rather quickly. And what would happen all too often is that they would start out, and then they'd get a few people in, you know, who just really constantly needed, every new person, every new woman that came in needed her consciousness raised. You know? I mean, it was a process. People didn't just become feminists, but, you know, turning on a light. You know, they had to get their consciousness raised. So there was two ways of approaching this, and ours was the minority view, definitely. The majority view was it was important to reach out, and that was a very big question. People would say, well, I mean, I can't tell you how many women came, knocked on our door, and said, now, they'd walk right in and introduce themselves and say, now, who's in charge here? And how do you make your decision? Everything you're saying, you know. And, but this was like maybe, you know, four or five women a day doing this.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine, this kind of onslaught. And at the Women's Center, it was like maybe 20 women a day doing this. And they would come in, they'd want to know what was going on, and they would want to participate. But they would also bring in with them all of the excess baggage with women that they had all those years.
Mm-hmm.
I had women say to me, well, you're not reaching out to poor women. Well, so happened, we were poor women. We were ourselves housewives, all of us, that initially started it. We soon were joined by lots of people who weren't, but the initial group, and we were all working class people. But, you know, there was that level of, what shall I say, critical thinking going on. It was it's like a 13-year-old, if you ever know what it's like to raise a teenager. That it's a very awkward stage when they are waking up to their own rights and trying to exercise their, you know, things. They can be pretty obnoxious. And frequently people were very obnoxious. And we were happy to have those people come into our group. So we didn't let their thinking prevail. You know, we enlightened them. We raised their consciousness. And mostly it worked great. sometimes I didn't. Sometimes, oh, particularly when we started the clinic. And maybe that's the schism you're speaking of. Because when we started the clinic, before that we had referred women to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But once we started our clinic, and we had all these separate job descriptions, as I'm mentioning, and separate mm-hmm. roles, it was foreseeable, and it did happen, that different people developed a certain protectiveness to their turf and to their part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the clinic workers, well, if we weren't here, you know, we wouldn't have any income.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the administrators, well, if we weren't here, you know, we wouldn't have any guidance.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be, you know, getting Medi-Cal or whatever. And when we initially started, there were a group of women who came in who were very fine women, but basically wanted, who their idea of a political action was to run a clinic. And they didn't think that we should spend all that money running around the countryside doing things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they didn't like taking percent salaries. I mean, here they could see that we were bringing in the money. I mean, we had income.
Mm-hmm.
We had cash flow. And they wanted a little bit more of it to stick to the people. They lost. They just lost. The majority of the people, you know, said, no, that's not what we're here for. We're here to make a revolution. We're here to change the way things are. We're not just here to make a salary. And that, what can I say? We won. We won because, for one thing, we knew what we wanted. You know, we had a coherent philosophy. We didn't mind charging money. We weren't ashamed. We had a point of view. A lot of people didn't like that. They still don't. We have toned down. We've had to tone down. Everyone's toned down. You know, but still, the health center still represents, for good or ill, we are the more radical. I mean, for example, we are against imperialism. As part of our point of view. We're not just trying to work to get women higher pay here or something. We really see world politics. That separates us from a lot of people. We're pro, you know, gay rights and women's sexuality. That separates us from a lot of people. We're, oh, I don't know, I can name many things. I mean, you know. Like breast cancer, for example, we're against mammograms, which is a cutting issue right there. I mean, the mainstream of the women's health movement is for mammograms, and we do refer women for mammograms here, but we always tell them, you know, what our doubts are as to the efficacy of mammograms and the whole thinking behind early detection and what does that mean. We're against population control, which, by the way, the Women's Health Movement right this minute is jumping on the population control bandwagon so much you make your head spin. Internationally, they are locking hands with, you know, the classic population control forces to start clinics overseas and, you know, from our point of view, oftentimes against the best interests of the people of the country that they're going into. So, you know, yeah, there's this is not all one big happy family.